Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Welcome to the first episode and the return of the US Gamer Podcast, the brand new podcast in which we talk about all of the things, not just RPGs. We're talking about video games in general. It turns out that there's more to life than Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, and Persona, and whatever else we're talking about on Acts of the Blood God. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me today is Naughty Oxford.
Hello, you probably know me by now. I am the staff writer for US Gamer and resident shit poster.
Katie McCarthy.
Hi, I'm Katie McCarthy. I am a staff writer of sorts, I guess. I do a little bit of everything around here, I guess.
And Mike Williams.
Hello, hello. I am the reviews editor, and that's pretty much all I do.
Mike knows who he is.
You may recall, of course, that we previously had a flagship podcast. It was called From Us to You, and it was kind of a weird podcast, to be honest, because like it was kind of dreamt up as like, yeah, let's do this thing. Yeah. And then we were like kind of hanging out and talking about just random topics and such. And our posting schedule got a little bit irregular. And then we tried to relaunch it as more of a video thing. And that was taking up way too much time. And then we ended up tabling it for a while. And this is kind of our rebirth, I suppose. Like, because we needed an opportunity to kind of get our faces out there to be able to talk a little bit and be able to talk about general games, something that we haven't easily been able to do in the past. In the near future, we may actually start streaming this, but to begin, we will be actually doing just regular podcasting. And by the way, From Us to You is not gone. This is using the original From Us to You feed. So if you look on your podcast app, you should be able to see From Us, old From Us to You episodes. If you really want to hear about the halcyon days of 2015 and 2014, there you go.
Good times.
Listen to us talk about Fallout 4 or something like that. Also, you can go on SoundCloud, which we will also be posting on. But this is the basic layout of the podcast. We're going to be talking about what we've been playing. Shock, shock, shock. We're going to do some quick hit headlines. And then we're going to have a topic. And this week's topic is what exactly do we want out of a sequel? Because I feel like, Katie brought this one up, actually. She felt like Destiny 2 and Splatoon 2 were going, it's not enough. It's not enough of a sequel. So we're going to ask ourselves, what do we want out of a sequel? But first thing is first, speaking of sequels and Splatoon 2, Katie, how many hours have you been playing a Splatoon 2 at this point?
So, according to my Switch, I didn't realize this until I was just, like, looking at friends who were online or something, and I've apparently spent, like, 80-plus hours in Splatoon 2 already, which is kind of crazy considering how recently that game came out. But then when I was, like, thinking about it, I was like, I am, like, playing this for a good, like, few hours every day, like, every night. Like, I would just be laying on the couch and just, oh, I'm going to play some ranked for a couple hours and then, like, salmon run if it's online because it's, like, timed or whatever. That game's, like, really sucking time out of my day, and I keep going back to it, which is surprising. Like, I usually, after I finish a review game, I just kind of naturally drop it. Like, even if it's a multiplayer game, it just kind of, it just happens, you know? You, like, play so much of it. Yeah, it's like, you play so much of it, you're just kind of like, oh, I'm good. But, like, Splatoon's, like, really kept my attention. Kind of like the first one did. Like, that, like, dominated my summer when that came out. And I'm just curious, like, how much have you all played of it? Probably not as much as me, I'm guessing, but
nah, I haven't played nearly as much as you, but I've played some. I've probably played 10 to 15 hours at this point because it's really easy to get sucked into it because I'll have my Switch sitting next to my bed or sitting next to me, my desk, and I'll be like, oh, I'm writing an article. Oh, I need a break. Hello, Nintendo Switch with Splatoon 2 on it.
Yeah, the portability is really devious, isn't it?
It really is. And then, like, as much as everybody complains about the matchmaking, and I think there are, like, justifiable criticisms, the one thing it gets really right is how fast you can get into a game. Mm-hmm. And that is, and you know, you just keep going, right? Like, it's so easy to be like, oh, I'll play one or two matches. And the next thing you know, you've been playing like five or six or seven matches. It just, it's, the matches are so quick and so addictive. Like, it really hits that sweet spot in terms of shooters.
Also, this is actually a criticism of its matchmaking. There's so many times where I accidentally hit continue when I'm like, that was my last match. And then I'm just like, oh, I can't back out. I guess
I'm stuck. You can just turn off your Switch. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to get like penalized because one time I did that and it was like, oh, that was pretty like, you know, whatever. It was like a warning.
It sends you like a passive aggressive message like, hey,
I'm Mr. Rossetti warning.
We've been watching you.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody does passive aggression like Nintendo.
They're really good at it.
But I don't know, like, because like the same thing kind of happened with, like, has happened with Overwatch, which I've kind of fallen off of in the past few months, I think, just because I played so much of it. Like, I poured like probably close to 300 hours into Overwatch, but like, I don't know, there's just this really good feeling cycle of the matches, and the matches are super quick, which I super appreciate, because there's so many multiplayer games where the matches are like 15 minutes long. Like a match of Overwatch can be like pretty long, especially if you're doing like competitive, but like Splatoon 2 is just 3 minutes and you're done, and it happens super quick. Like, you spawn really quick and you're like in there and your specials come really quickly, and it's like a really like dynamic and quick and fast paced feeling match, and that's so rare in multiplayer games, because I feel like usually like matchmaking takes forever. Like, I was thinking back on like Titanfall recently, and like, I remember Titanfall 2, like, as much as I loved it, matchmaking took so long. Like, it would just be, I'd be waiting 5 minutes between matches. It was like never like super, it's not like instantaneous like it is with Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
That's what knocked me out of Battlefield 1, was like how long it could take to get into a proper match. It was super annoying, right? Like, once you got going, it was like, great, this is fun. I'm going to be playing for the next 30 minutes or so, whatever. But the amount of time it takes, like, the amount of downtime and the amount of stuff, like, loading up everything and everything, isn't great. How about that?
I find part of my issue there is it's very quick, possibly because I don't think Splatoon's matchmaking is all that great.
Yeah.
Like, it just sort of throws people together.
Here's
like,
this person. Here's together. This person. Get in there.
And we got eight people. Let's throw them on two teams. Are these balanced? No, not really.
Not in the least.
Fight or die. There have been a few matches where it's like, oh, everyone on the other team's level 30, and I have a bunch of like level fives on my team.
Aww,
I guess
babies.
This is going to go great.
Nope. That moment when you have a level one and you're like, great, I'm about to be pinned right into my own base. We experienced this last week when I like loaded up, I basically fired up Splatoon 2 multiplayer for the first time and then proceeded to stream with Mike and Katie. But I will point out that I killed both Katie and Mike during that game. So, booyah. Look at me. I'm the master now.
You're already the editor-in-chief. What more do you want?
I do have a really important question for you all, and that question is, ketchup or mayo?
They both suck. Horseradish.
Oh, what? Come on. Are you a no-condiments person, Nadia?
No, I am I'm a little picky about my condiments. I like mustard, I like a horseradish. I also like, okay, you're not going to get what this is, HP sauce.
Oh, is that some weird Canadian thing?
No, it's a Commonwealth thing that, like, there's a million flavors in Britain, but Canada has a few, and it's, like, this really interesting sort of tangy condiment, and it's like a combination almost between ketchup and Worcestershire sauce. Like, it's its own thing.
That sounds kind of good. All
I
right.
Like it.
Katie, ketchup or mayo? Ketchup or mayo?
I like ketchup. I like Waddy's tomato sauce, and I chose mayo because I don't really have like a reasoning. I don't think I like mayo more, but I was thinking about it. I was like, I feel like I technically consume mayo more on a regular basis. So like, in a way, I feel like I like mayo more, even though I'm not like seeking out mayo for everything.
Seek out mayo.
I feel like,
and I like Kewpie mayo. Like,
mayo. What the hell is Kewpie mayo?
It's like, it's Japanese mayonnaise. It's not as
I was supposed to say.
It's good, yeah.
I feel like we had this discussion because I called you a condiment hipster last night.
I think we had this conversation on our test episode that will never see the light of day.
Yes, there was a test episode of this podcast that we will never speak of again.
Rest in peace. But yeah, I chose mayo. A lot of my friends chose ketchup. There are a few of my friends that, because on the app, you can see what your friends chose, which I didn't know until I checked it for like gear earlier. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You can see like who's on what side. And I was like, oh, all my friends chose ketchup. Oh, well.
We can't be friends anymore.
You know, yeah. All my ketchup friends are dead to me.
I can't remember if we talked about this on the RPG podcast or like a stream or even the long lost test episode, but it reminds me of the days when the Wii used to have their little polls or whatever, and like people would actually vote in them, and it felt cool. This was a period before like social media really became a thing, right? Like Twitter did not come around until like 2008.
Yeah.
And Facebook was so basic and so simple. This was still like the MySpace era, right? Wow. So like there wasn't social media as we know it now. So the Wii was maybe the really the vanguard of that kind of thing, that being able to tap into the zeitgeist and ask people what they think about a thing. And it turns out that people really like to share their opinions on things.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was on the podcast for Blood God last week, because I mentioned the Check Me Out channel where people would make their own Miis, and, you know, they'd all line up and pose, and like people would put like big hairy men for the Princess Peach Miis. Mike shaking his head in despair.
The end of Western civilization as we know it.
It began with the Wii.
It will end with Nintendo somehow.
Speaking of multiplayer games that like I cannot put down, I'm only going to talk about this briefly. In the past podcasts, we always had a Cat Bailey Sports Minute, where I would literally take 1 minute to talk about sports just so I can get it off my chest. So I guess this is my Cat Bailey Sports Minute. I've been playing a lot of the NHL 18 beta, which has been, I cannot put it down. It's actually kind of ridiculous, like how much time I've put into that stupid game. And it's actually getting kind of annoying. This is a thing that happens to me periodically. I will be playing a multiplayer game, and I will get really, really, really into it. And then I start to feel guilty. I'm going, oh my God, I have other work I need to be done doing. I should be playing like all of these other games. Like these games are piling up right now. I could be finally finishing Persona 5, but I'm not. I'm sitting here playing the NHL 18 beta. How am I? I'm wasting my time. And then finally, after it always happens where I'll be up until like 2 a.m. playing, and then I'll go, no, I cannot do this again. Never again. I'm putting it away. Done. I'm finished. And that is like my guilt cycle with multiplayer games. Does this happen to anybody else?
It happens to me, definitely.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Like, I was like, I cannot spend time playing this game right now. There are other games to play. Like, and it just like, I've been playing Fortnite, but I can't continue to play Fortnite because I have Batman the Enemy Within, and then I just got another code for Minecraft Story Mode Episode 2, and then there are other games coming in the rest of August, and I have Otakon next week, so there's no time. There's no time to stop and play multiplayer games anymore.
Especially come fall. And then what always happens is, like, fall will be happening. I'll be playing all of these games for review. I'm, like, super stressed out. I'm like, man, once I get all these games off my plate, I'm just going to go back and I'm going to properly enjoy this game or that game, or I'm going to finally finish Witcher 3 or whatever.
The games never end, Kat.
And then the blessed Christmas break comes along, and I'm like, yes, at last I have all the time in the world. Ooh, SD Gundam G Generation Genesis. Why am I putting 100 hours into this game? I don't know.
It's like some sort of twisted time enough at last, you know.
Yes.
You see SD Gundam, but I had time now. It's not fair.
Yeah, that is the secret curse of playing games, right? I mean, or like reviewing games for a living. Like, you just got to keep playing all of the games. So you can't just sit there and focus on one particular game. Something that a friend of mine told me that will always kind of reverberate in my mind is, he said, oh yeah, World of Warcraft saves me tons of money. And I was like, I don't understand. You're spending what, $15 a month to play this game? And he's like, yeah, but I could be spending like $50 to $100 a month to play other games. So
You got a point.
Yeah, whatever. Like, I put all my time into World of Warcraft.
That reminds me, Kat, just going back to hockey for a second, I told my parents that you're a Wilds fan. They want to know what's wrong with you.
A Wilds fan?
Yeah.
What?
Wild.
Your parents are getting judgy about the Minnesota Wild? Why? They're Maple Leafs fans, aren't they?
Yes.
I mean, there's nothing worse than that, to be honest.
No, you're right, and we all know it, but we're all Leaf fans.
I mean, you guys, the last time you won a Stanley Cup was like 50 years before we even existed, so I don't know. I don't think you guys have any room to talk.
No, they're being judgy, but I just thought you should know.
Yeah.
And it's really- I stand with Nadia's parents.
Oh, come on. Minnesota Wild are a great team. I thoroughly enjoy them. As for the NHL 18 beta, I was actually really critical. I was actually going, I don't know, it's not different enough, but it adds some things. And it's, I think the thing that's really interesting to me personally is that compared to all of the other sports games, it's probably the most skill-based. I feel like you can kind of, in the other sports games, you can kind of set it up in such a way that's like, oh, I have found the optimal tactics. And so as long as I use these tactics, I'm going to probably be okay. Whereas in NHL, it's like, no, if like you can set up your defense and everything as well as you can, but if somebody's really good at deking and like dangling the puck and all that stuff, it does not matter. They are going to score. They're going to like move around five of your guys, and then they're going to put the puck in the net every time. And you just go, okay, yeah, I can't beat you.
And the guys hug it out.
Yes, there are fights, and the guys do hug it out. Oh. And you can also raise your hand, like Street Fighter style, and be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. They even get black eyes and stuff. Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. Like, it can be really therapeutic when you're, like, losing by 10 goals. And I did lose some games by, like, literally 10-0 because, like, wow, the people we're playing in the beta are ridiculous. It can be really therapeutic to just run somebody into the boards, and then I'll go initiate fight. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to initiate fight. Come on, come on. And then if you can knock them down, you can be like, okay, at least I have that. At least I have that.
Ice rage.
Mike, you've been playing Fortnite.
I have been playing Fortnite. I've been playing Fortnite off and on in between all of my other games, and there is a core of, as I wrote in our early access review thing, there's a core of a great game in there, buried under loads and loads of systems and menus and other extra stuff. And, like, I can see how they got there, but I'm like, no one stopped to say no.
No one slapped any wrists.
Right. And then I tweeted that, and somebody else who is also a developer was like, yeah, no, I remember playing that in alpha, and it was closer to that beautiful core that you talk about without all those extra systems, because they didn't have all that stuff. So I'm just like, I hate when, like, and I don't want to say ruin. Handicap is probably my best. I hate when developers handicap their own games. Because, like, have you ever played a game that you're like, oh, I kind of like, Splatoon 2 is actually almost like that to me. Same deal. Like, the core of this game is great, but there are a bunch of odd, tiny design decisions that Nintendo made that just irk the hell out of me.
And they kind of add up, don't they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I ended up giving it, like, a 4 instead of, like, you know, a 5. Because, like, there's so much I super love about, but it's just there's so much annoying little things. Like, and it's always, it's so Nintendo. It's
so Nintendo. So Nintendo, yeah. Trademark.
Yeah. So, like, Fortnite, like, when I'm playing it, like, in the actual missions, I'm like, ah, this is fun. This is great. We're doing really well. When I'm not playing it, like, outside of missions, wading through menus and messing with hero and survivor cards and upgrading and breaking up. It's a slog. And they just need to do something about it. I don't know what, like, streamline some stuff, take some stuff out. Like, I understand you got your free-to-play thing. You need to throw stuff in that direction, but there are other games that do free-to-play that don't, like, get in my way.
Mm.
So it's one of those games I'm like, yes, you should play Fortnite. But.
I disagree. I don't think you need to play Fortnite.
Okay, well, that's settled.
I think it's an interesting idea. Like, yeah, they mash together Minecraft elements with, like, Left 4 Dead with, I don't know, like, tower defense or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Horde mode. It's Horde mode, where, like, you're hanging out and you're shooting lots of zombies as they're coming. Not a terrible concept, all things considered. Like, I think it's really great, but in that regard. But putting aside that, like, I don't know, like, the art style is almost kind of cliche in a lot of respects. Yeah. Like, it's this weird mashup of Plants vs. Zombies and a little bit of Overwatch, I suppose. Like that really kind of cheap looking cel shaded kind of thing. Like, I think the reason that Overwatch was so successful is because Blizzard's artists are the best in the business. They make the characters look so expressive and so interesting. And every single character has like their own little visual flair. Mm-hmm. Like, their every like frame of animation expresses who that character is, from Junkrat to Tracer to Roadhog, doesn't matter, right?
Right.
Whereas like you look at a character in Fortnite and they're like really generic looking, right? Like, it's girl, like kind of adventure girl, or like I couldn't even tell you like what most of the characters look like. They're very basic. And then like Katie and I were playing the game and it was like, this is kind of boring, right? Like we built up a little area. We laid down some traps really quickly, and then we stood behind a wall and shot zombies as they came in. Like, it was just like, and I get it, it was still early, but just we weren't really feeling it. Like, we weren't feeling the tension. We weren't really feeling the excitement. It was just like, I get it. They're going to, like, tune it. They're going to keep adding enemies. They'll keep refining the actual game, but, like, as first impressions go, it made a pretty negative one on me, and I just didn't want to keep going. I mean, would you agree, Katie?
Yeah, I don't have plans to ever play a game again. I found it, but I can see it getting better as it goes on, as like obviously like your tower defense stuff becomes more like integral, because like we were pretty early, obviously, so it's like it wasn't as
like
essential in a way, you know?
Yeah, early on you don't need to even build stuff. In fact, a lot of vet players tell you not to, as one of the tips. Don't build anything. Save all that.
Save all the materials
for later. Yeah.
Why do the materials not? Why do they make a finite number of materials?
That's weird.
It's kind of weird to me.
It's less that it's finite and more that there's no free roam mode. So all the materials you have are materials that you gain through missions, and the missions themselves are timed if you want to get the best to complete all of the bonus objectives. So there's sort of a give and take of okay, what's the point of this mission? All right, we all know what the point of this mission is. Good, everyone break, go find your own materials for the next 10 minutes and then let's come back and do this thing. And that's how most of the higher level missions play out. Basically, everyone just breaks and spreads out and goes hunting for their own materials, and then like 10 minutes later everyone comes back, does all the objectives, and then finishes the mission.
It seems like that is something that they're going to have to account for in their design, the fact that people are hoarding materials and are completely unwilling to actually spend them because of the free-to-play mechanics. That is a problem for Epic.
Yeah. And then, like, the other game I'm playing is the opposite problem, which is Gigantic, which is, like, Gigantic just came out after, like, a year and a half of just turmoil for the developer Motiga. And Gigantic is just, like, it has one gameplay mode, and it does that gameplay mode very well, and the characters are well designed, and that's great, but it's one gameplay mode.
It's a MOBA, right?
No, it's
I think everybody knows it as a MOBA.
Yeah, it's really not. It's one of those things like I'm trying to
MOBA-like.
I
want to
say it feels closer like Paragon is more of a MOBA than gigantic is, because there's no minions. There are rough lanes, but it's not played like Smite or Paragon or anything like that. It's more of just like an Overwatch style game in third person.
Okay, so it's third person Overwatch.
Yeah. More objective based. Basically, the gigantic part is from the big monsters at the end of each team's field, and by killing other team members, eventually your monster gets up, goes and attacks the other one, and then you attack the open weak point there, and that's how you win a match, by attacking the open weak points on the opposing team's monster. It's very, very good, but it's one game mode that it does well. There's no other game modes.
So it's not like Overwatch, where it's like every map is just like randomly cycling through maps, and like each map having its own particular play style and that kind of thing.
Right. Imagine if Overwatch had launched with just like
a payload.
Escort the payload. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think people would get tired of it pretty quickly.
Yeah. And so it's like, wow, this is like really good. And the designs, like you were talking about the designs of Fortnite, the designs are amazing. Like, the silhouettes are good for tactical purposes. The characters all look unique and distinct, but it's one thing. Mm. And when I wrote both of those back to back, that was the thing. It was like, oh, wow, like one of these games does one thing really well, but buries it under systems. Another does one thing really well, but that's all it has.
And that's how Mike managed to cheat and sneak in two games into the what you've been playing kind of segment.
Good job.
But Nadia is going to be able to sneak in multiple games because she has been in the middle of a project that I made her do. poor Nadia, right? Yeah. She's been reviewing every game on the Super NES Classic in anticipation of it coming out at the end of September and none of us being able to actually play them. But Nadia, what has it been like going through Nintendo's kind of catalog in chronological order?
Mostly very good. One thing that really is interesting is how the years attached to a game have very, very little to do with its quality. It's not like, you know, 1992 games are kind of clumsy the way those early NES games were back in the day, and like, you know, they just get better and better. I mean, it does in some ways. Like, you can kind of see Mario World is kind of a primitive looking game next to the likes of a lot of the games that came out in 1995. But for the most part, there's been like a very, I mean, let's face it, Nintendo's choosing the best of the best for this console, but there's a very consistent kind of level of quality going on with the SNES Classic releases, with a couple of exceptions. The other day, for example, I reviewed Star Fox, and as I said in my review, that's a game you can tell, like, the level design is good, the characters are great, of course they're iconic, But the hardware did not age well.
Doesn't hold up.
I hate to say that it doesn't hold up, but yeah.
It's like Donkey Kong Country. It's like, oh, this was a technical marvel back in 1994.
Well, Donkey Kong Country, the thing about Donkey Kong Country is, I will say the original doesn't hold up as well, but I do love 2. I still love Donkey Kong Country 2. And I think
because it actually has decent design and doesn't constantly repeat its boss battles.
That too, yeah. I'm really disappointed that we have the original instead of 2 on the SNES Classic, but I guess that's a topic for another day.
Mm.
But
Katie, you obviously don't remember the Super Nintendo very much, so like, I'm curious kind of like what your perspective is on SNES, like nostalgia and like the games in general.
I mean, I'm like a baby, so yeah, I never had any Nintendo consoles growing up aside from like a Game Boy Color and like a Game Boy Advance, so I like missed out on a lot of things. And like, I've only played 2 games on this like SNES Classic. Like, I played Link to the Past and Super Mario World, and I did not play those on the SNES. I played them, I think, on like Game Boy ports or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I want one. I probably won't get one, obviously. I can already anticipate it's not going to happen. Because there's some, like, I've always wanted to play Earthbound, which I've started so many times, I feel like.
You have a DS, right? Things. You have a 3DS, right?
I have a 3DS,
You can buy it on there.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I really love playing SNES games on the 3DS, just saying. I think it's only the
Yeah, that seems like a good console for it, definitely.
The new 3DS is the only one that can download the SNES games, right? I can't remember.
Yeah, I have a new 3DS, okay. So I could technically do that. So, but yeah, I don't know. I want one. It's weird. Like, Nintendo nostalgia has always been weird for me because it's like super, I just don't, it's not, I don't have any of it, you know? It's like, it's kind of like this weird blank, like blind spot.
So you are the... You are the country, you are Britain in one person, because I find Britain is like that too. You always have British people saying, oh, the NES wasn't that good, because they were all into like Sega and the ZX Spectrum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never, they're divorced from the nostalgia, so they tend to be a lot more critical of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I guess that's like my view is like, oh, I don't have like this weird, like, rose tinted glasses view of Nintendo stuff. Because of that, because I didn't like grow, it's not, it wasn't like this beacon of my childhood. Like, I grew up like PlayStation games, so I guess like,
oh, that's kind that's of even like, worse.
Yeah, and yeah. honestly, like, I don't even like remember PlayStation games that fondly.
Yeah, some of the early PS1 games, like, you go back and look at them, and I'm just like, I mean, I know you guys were doing what you had to with the technology, but oh.
Well, the thing with PS1 nostalgia is, if you are an RPG fan, it was the greatest console of all time because it brought so many JRPGs to the West.
Thanks to Super Nintendo or the PlayStation?
The PlayStation.
The PlayStation.
I mean, it made JRPGs what they are today, but the Super Nintendo, I think, is a better console in general for like RPGs.
But. Yeah, a lot of the RPGs that came over were kind of trash, but at the same time, like, it was just really interesting to finally see all these games come over.
Not only did it bring JRPGs over, it made it the biggest genre.
Yeah.
Which, like, is, like, crazy to even think about now. It's like, oh yeah, like, Final Fantasy VIII was the biggest game going in 1999, like, by far. But, yes, this is a topic that we've discussed many times before, but, like, I think the interesting thing about going back and just kind of going game by game is kind of being able to see, like, every console has a life cycle and kind of an arc. And you see, like, at the beginning where the developers, like, are like, oh, look at this new technology and let us, like, kind of, like, play around with it and get, like, steadily better. And then there's kind of a peak where, like, they're like, they've become very comfortable with it, and they're also still being very creative. And then there's the end life stuff where it's like they've mastered the technology, they've pushed it as they've wrung as much juice as they possibly can out of it. And maybe there's some like really amazing games coming out, like Chrono Trigger and that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's a lot of sequels, right?
Yeah.
And we're actually getting to that point where I would say with this generation, I would say that this generation has now officially passed its peak. Like, we are no longer. Yeah, you saw it at this past E3 where, like, there weren't, like, the announcements weren't, like, super exciting. A lot. It was actually quite predictable for the most part. We weren't seeing a lot of surprises. That tells me that developers have kind of, like, settled in, right? And they're, like, going with what works on, like, the PS4 and the Xbox One, and they're kind of riding it out until the next round of consoles comes around.
Well, it's going to be a while.
2018 is the peak, because 2017 has been amazing.
I mean, 2017 has been amazing. I'm saying that we've hit the peak, and now we're on the downside. And don't forget, by the way, that a lot of 2017's amazingness has been because of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which was on the PC, and Zelda Breath of the Wild, which was on a console that literally just came out. Okay, so that's not on the PS4 and the Xbox One.
No, but you guys still got Persona 5 and Nier Automata and all this, you know.
Yeah, there's like a lot of, and like,
yes, Horizon, you're totally right. Games that we've been waiting for ages to come out are finally out. And it's like, okay, what's next? Interesting.
Dancing All Night.
And actually, on that note, we'll be doing some quick hit headlines in the next segment. Well, we will be right back. And we're back, fresh off discussing the future U.S. Gamer office in New York, which will apparently be a cat-friendly office with towers and all of those things. I look forward to our cat-friendly future here at U.S. Gamer, but we are going to do some quick hit headlines really quickly. first. Persona 3 and 5 are both getting dancing games. Katie, you're a huge fan of Persona 4 Dancing All Night. Quick take, go.
I like that game a lot. I don't think the dancing game, that like actual rhythm game in it, is that great, but it was like this. It's really bad, actually, to be like perfectly honest, as someone who was like a big fan of rhythm games. But it was like this really fun, like, self-aware outlet for like these really cool like remixes from really cool like Japanese DJs, and it had like this really cool like visual novel component that I really liked. That was like this nice like little epilogue to Persona
that went on and on and
I
on.
Liked it.
They
and
took
I liked
the story
new, yeah.
entirely too seriously, but it was fun.
Yeah, like I thought it was super fun. I like the new characters in it. I like how you could dance to the Junos theme. It was a super like adorable, fun little thing. And like while I was playing, I was like, man, I wish like Persona 3 got one of these, and now both Persona 3.
I love how they went back to destroy Persona 3's dignity.
Yeah, and Persona 3 I feel like is hilarious because it seems like the most, it doesn't make any sense. Like that of all the Persona games, I feel like Persona 3 probably makes the least sense for that format. And I don't, like, who knows if these will have, like, visual novel components, too. Like, I kind of hope they do. I don't know how Persona 3s would work, but, you know, whatever. And I'm looking forward to those, to be honest, so.
Really quickly, Persona 3 or Persona 5, which has the better soundtrack? Go, Katie.
3, totally. Like, 3 still is the best one, hands down.
Nadia.
I have to admit, well, I have listened to 3 a little bit. Like, I have, like, I hear it through RPGGamer.net, which I listen to, like, for game music. But, God, just listening to 5, and, like, I have 5, I have Rivers in the Desert on my iPod, and, like, Life Will Change is a great fucking song. It just gets me pumped every single time.
Persona 4 has the best soundtrack. Mike.
I can't argue that either.
Okay, Dragon Quest sells 2 million copies in Japan. That's a lot of copies, given that a lot of new games like sell, you know, a few hundred thousand, and they're like, oh, they're turning cartwheels because that's amazing. But Mike, yeah. You don't think that it's actually that high, all things considered?
Well, okay, so it is high. It's far higher than most other games, as you point out, which is why a lot of people were like, oh, Japanese developers should just focus on Japan. They can't, because Japan is an island, they don't have that many people, and games don't tend to sell a lot there. But Dragon Quest, 2 million, 1.1 million of that was on 3DS, 950,000 was on PS4. But if you look at some of the old sales, that's kind of down from the heights, which would be Dragon Quest 8. Dragon Quest 9, which were the last two story entries. So Dragon Quest 9 sold 2.3 million for that first week, and Dragon Quest 8 was, I believe, 2.2 million. So it's slightly down, which is less of an issue, but maybe like the problem is both of those had a single platform that they were selling on, and this is split across two platforms, which probably points to an issue.
If it were on one platform, it would sell 2 million copies,
right? But like right now, we're Japan has this weird platform split between 3DS and PS4, and maybe the Switch is the answer to that for them. But right now, that's like two markets that really don't overlap. And in fact, Dragon Quest, the latest one, is two completely different games on 3DS and PS4. Mm-hmm. Like, the 3DS version is a lot closer to the older Dragon Quest games, because it has like the overhead style like map, then you're walking around. Whereas the PS4 version is more what you would expect from a modern, updated Dragon Quest. And so it's really weird, like, looking at the sales of this, because they're two very different games carrying the same name, but the same plot, same characters, and stuff like that. Like, they don't really 100% play exactly the same. So what people are wondering is how much overlap is there?
I mean, I don't think people really understand like what the difference is.
Yeah, so like how many players are avid Dragon Quest players and bought both the PS4 and the 3DS version? Because a lot of importers we know did, anecdotally. So,
yeah,
it's very weird. It's very weird looking at the numbers. I think it'll continue to do well, and as we've pointed out, that's far outstripping pretty much everything else that has come out
outside of maybe Monster Hunter.
Japan. Splatoon 2 did 600,000
copies.
Yeah, 648,000, and that was mind blowing right there. A lot of Japanese games in Media Create for debut tend to not even break 100,000. So
wow,
Nadia, PS4 or 3DS version, which or both?
Well, like the girl in the taco commercial, why not both?
I'm playing
I'm
getting the PS4 version.
I'd probably start with PS4
or Switch.
Yes, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I'm just so conditioned to play RPGs on the go now that it's like, I don't know, maybe I should hold out for the Nintendo Switch version, which is ostensibly coming out.
That's the other question. How much will the Switch version sell? I mean, considering the platform, what, has 1.2 million users in Japan?
And everybody will have already purchased it.
Right, for the other two platforms. And the Switch version, as far as we can tell, is like a weird melange of the two. Because it's not as robust as the PS4 version, but not as retro-themed as the 3DS one. So,
indeed. Yeah. Okay, next headline. Capcom is starting to prepare more games for the Nintendo Switch. Apparently, Street Fighter sold well enough to convince them. I would also say that they probably looked at the actual platform sales numbers and went, huh, perhaps we should put our games, which are perfectly suited for the Nintendo Switch, onto the Nintendo Switch. This is a thing that maybe we should do.
That would be wise. Why not look into bringing back Rockman? Capcom?
Looking at the numbers, Mega Man does make money.
Honestly, Mega Man is a weird thing in that Japan, I don't think, cares about him anymore, but America is nuts about him. Like I've said in the past, in
define
my articles.
Define nuts.
And there is a WWE. There is a WWE wrestler, TJ Perkins. His whole thing is is a Mega Man. Like it's not Mega Man explicitly, but he uses the Dr. Wily's like number one castle theme from Mega Man 2. Not like note for note, of course, but you can tell it's that.
Is that a reference? Is that him going, I am nuts for Mega Man, or is that him going, I know that people are into the NES and are into 8-bit nostalgia, so I'm just going to use this thing that is heavily associated with the NES.
Both. I mean, think about it. Mega Man is associated with 8-bit nostalgia, which is, you know, really hot right now. I mean, let's not forget.
I mean, it has been for like a decade. I would say 16-bit nostalgia is in now. 8-bit nostalgia is done. 16-bit all the way. Super NES classic. Here it comes.
Mega Man X has the 16-bit nostalgia going on too, and that's going on the SNES classic. So, I mean, Kat, come on, give me some credit here. Like my husband runs the Mega Man Network. I've been a Mega Man fan online since 1995. I kind of know the pulse of the fandom.
You are in the top 1%. You're in the top 0.1% of Mega Man fans, Nada. You freaking wrote a book about it. You literally wrote the book on Mega Man. I mean, come on.
But, so, Mega Man. Looking, Capcom releases all of these numbers. The highest selling Mega Man title is Mega Man 2. 1.5 million copies. That's Mega Man 2 on NES. So, 1.5 million, that's number 48 out of Capcom's, like, top 100 games that have sold over a million. The next Mega Man game is Mega Man Battle Network 4 with 1.3 million copies. So it's not like and then after that Mega Man X with
how did 9 do?
9 is not on this list. It tops out at 80. So Capcom all told has only released 80 games that have broke a million copies.
Yikes.
Mega Man 3 is the last one on the list at 1.08
So what you're saying is that there's a lot of heat around Mega Man, but it's not necessarily like, you know...
Yeah, yeah, right. And that's totally understandable. All you really have to do is... I'm not saying, like, oh, let's have a full AAA release here. It just, you know, a downloadable title would be
right
perfectly yeah. Fine.
The issue is one, yeah, that I brought up in my thing about Capcom before, is that Capcom is like a lot of publishers where they don't do that B-level mid... Like, mm-hmm. They want all the money or no money. It's like... So, like, there's definitely, like... Capcom could probably pull out like a good digital only Mega Man, maybe a Final Fight game, Super Ghouls, and like they have a lot of games that they could, if they threw like a 20-man team at, they mm-hmm. could probably make some good money on the side, but they don't.
Yeah, they usually port their just like stuff to mobile, and it's usually trash.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to do a better job of managing their properties.
They really do.
Maybe they could take a page from Nintendo, which stuff like the NES Classics Collection, for example, like is a really good example of like keeping it in the public eye. I think also Capcom has had a problem where like maybe the quality of some of their games has been a lot more variable. Mm-hmm. So as a result, like that has hurt the cachet of the original retro franchises. Like Mega Man, they gutted Mega Man. Like they treated that franchise so badly. Same with Bionic Commando, to be honest. Like when they tried to make it into a AAA thing and it just was like, God, yeah, was that went well. Good job, guys. Like I would say that the Capcom retro franchise that has maybe the most kind of mind share, I suppose, to use a buzzy term, is Street Fighter at this point. And even Street Fighter V, like the Street Fighter V community, Street Fighter community is like, oh my god, I don't like Street Fighter V.
And they're on their way to destroying Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, and the game's not even out yet.
Yeah.
So, I think there's a way forward for Capcom. Like, I think if they were smart, they would license these games out. Mm-hmm. Like, there's definitely a Japanese or even American indie developer that would take Mega Man and do something worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Final Fight or whatever. You just have to like give it to somebody, and like that's a low effort. Like you don't even have to develop it; you just get the licensing fee and call it a day.
People have been saying that like the way that Nintendo treated Mega Man in Smash Brothers, like with his final Smash and everything, was like so much better than the way Capcom itself has treated Mega Man in the past like decade.
When they did the anniversary, where they like basically took the fan game Mega Man Cross Street Fighter and gave it an official release.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I loved that idea. Like, I loved the idea behind the game. And it was so hilarious to fight, like, Ryu in, like, with, like, an 8-bit rendition of the Street Fighter theme and everything. Like, it was a great bit of fan service.
Yeah, it was cute.
But as a game, it actually wasn't that good.
Yeah. I remember playing it for 1UP back in the day.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but it looks like what Capcom will instead do is port old games over again. They just announced Resident Evil Revelations 1 and 2, which is also coming to PS4 and Xbox One, is coming to the Switch. So you can expect to see Mega Man Legacy Collection, probably the Disney Afternoon Collection.
Legacy
all that
Collection
stuff that
2.
They've already done.
Mm-hmm.
Just ported it over to the Switch and shoved out the door. At probably the same price point, despite the fact that, you know, they're games that are already out elsewhere.
Well, I've been saying all along that Monster Hunter is going to be their killer app. And it's going to be one of the Switch's two killer apps, at least in Japan. I mean, the 3DS won, ultimately, because it got Monster Hunter and the Vita didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that was a huge factor.
Coup. Yeah, and it'll be interesting because we get Monster Hunter XX for Switch. But the main Monster Hunter team is apparently working on Monster Hunter World. I thought it was just like an extra team, but no, it's apparently the main Monster Hunter.
They're going all out to finally get the West on board.
Right, which is that is such a gamble.
It is. I mean,
it might work.
But a co-op action game where you're fighting giant monsters and you're playing out on your PS4, and if they get it right, it's going to be good. Like, what can I say? Like, they've been making these games for so long. I mean, like, the concept is gold. I'm sorry. Like, you get four people together to play Monster Hunter. Like, co-op is the thing. So, I mean, I don't think it's particularly a gamble to try and finally get a big market with this thing, given, like, how big it is in Japan. And to maybe, like, soften the corners a little bit and make it a little less esoteric than Monster Hunter currently is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, like, the weird thing when they announced Monster Hunter World is, like, I feel like they have this view of, like, Western games just being these, like, ugly, very brown, muddy type things.
You mean a thing that was, like, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like they just, like, sapped all the personality out of Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. Like, from what we've seen so far, like, very well, it could be not what we've seen, but it's just, like, and that was, like, a controversial thing, right? Like, a bunch of fans were kind of like, this doesn't look like Monster Hunter. This looks like a Western developer making Monster Hunter.
Yeah, Capcom seems to be, like, 10 years behind the trends in general. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, yeah. Hey, let's put our games on mobile, even though no one wants them there.
Ugh.
Yeah. Like, they could have very well just, like, made, like, a very big Monster Hunter that is on PS4 and looks really good, mm-hmm. but they, like, have changed, like, the visual, like, stuff entirely, and just looks kind of weird. I don't know. I'm interested to see more of that, obviously. But, yeah.
All right. Last little note. Long Dark is out, but you wouldn't really know it given kind of the lack of buzz around it. And I think part of the problem is that it's kind of been out 2 years in the minds of many people because of early access and that kind of thing. It's been a very strange release. Katie, I know that you're going to be picking up later tonight to give it a shot.
Yeah, and it's launching with 2 story episodes. So it's finally getting a, like, narrative campaign, like an episodic narrative campaign, which I'm interested to see more of, obviously, as I dive in tonight to see what's up.
What's up? I don't know, like, Long Dark, I don't play survival games in general, but I think Long Dark is maybe the one that I will make an exception for, because, yeah. I mean, it really is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to, like, contextualize survival in a really interesting way from what I've seen of it, because I never played it when I was in early access, because I was always like, I'm going to wait for the
full. Yeah, game. Same here.
It just, like, never came until now. But I've heard it's, like, a survival game that does, like, survival right, mm-hmm. Which is rare.
So, yeah, because, like, the dude at the front of Hinterlands is creative director Raphael von. I'm sorry, Raph, if I say your name.
Raphael von
Lirup? Lirup? I'm sorry. But he previously worked on Far Cry 2, which was one of the more survival focused ones, and he left Ubisoft. Early in the and actually you can find that interview on US Gamer, early in Far Cry 3's development, because they wanted to go in a different direction mm-hmm. instead of more survival focused. So he's probably been, you know, batting this around. Far Cry 3 was 2013, I want to say. He's been battering mm-hmm. this around for years.
Oh man, Far Cry 2 really is secretly a survival game, isn't it?
It is.
It was a survival 100%. Game before survival games were a thing. That's really interesting. Yep. Oh, man. You just opened my eyes, Mike.
Seen that. All right.
Look forward to our Long Dark coverage on the website. And, of course, Katie is going to be doing a Field Notes column. If you have missed her previous Field Note column, she's done Tokyo Jungle and Stardew Valley. So I look forward to her thoughts on the Long Dark. But we are going to continue on to our main topic. We'll be right back. Okay, this week's major topic, which is, what exactly do we want out of a sequel? Destiny 2 and Splatoon 2 are... Oh, let's see, Splatoon 2 is out, and one of the major criticisms of it is that it is too similar to the previous game. But I guess the question is, if it does a solid enough job of refining the previous formula, is that enough, or does it need to have a new gameplay mode, or... I don't know. What What are your thoughts on this, Katie? Because you're the one who proposed this topic in the first place.
I feel like, honestly, Splatoon, it refines enough and it adds Horde mode. And, like, I kind of wish the single player had more to it, but it's still fine and it kind of expands on some of its ideas. I do think it would have felt more like a sequel if it fixed its matchmaking, which it did not do. And I think that's, like, what most of the criticisms lie in, is, like, you can't really, it's not easy to group up with friends, and it's not easy to group up with friends in ranked. It's, like, gated behind, like, being rank B-, and there's, like, all these little things. And I think, honestly, if they had fixed a lot of... Because matchmaking improves did not really change from what it was in the first Splatoon. And that's kind of frustrating because, like, it's like a new console. There's, like, all these new opportunities and they didn't fix, like, the main criticism the first game even had.
Yeah.
It's like they just kind of, like, tacked on new stuff and they're like, oh, this is a sequel. But it's like, you have to fix the stuff that, like... You have to make an effort to fix what people did not like about you the first
time. That's Nintendo.
Yeah, and it's... I honestly think if they had fixed matchmaking, that wouldn't have been, like, the common narrative in, like, all the reviews around. It's
well, yeah.
Like, oh, it's feel like a sequel. It's like, if they fixed matchmaking, I feel like people would be like, oh, finally, this is, like, what Splatoon should be.
From the start, now it's on Switch, and, like, you can, like, the matchmaking's all good, and they improve the online. Perfect. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good job, yeah. Man.
And, I mean, I had a term for it. I always call it the shackles of success, and that once you have something that works, you have to move it forward a bit, but you can't change it too much because you'll piss the fans off.
Pokemon.
So you're kind of, like, stuck. But even then, like, a lot of games that have classically... been given this, oh, it's the same thing every year, or oh, the sequel's exactly the same. It's only that way if you're not a player of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't speak to, say, the Maddens or things, but Kat talks about the changes.
The problem that sports games have is that, you know, they put them out year after year, right? And essentially, it's going to be the same game every time with refinements and maybe better graphics. And at this point, though, they are platforms and they kind of wipe the slate clean every year with their Ultimate Team kind of stuff. And so it's like, oh, we've wiped the slate clean. You get to start all over with your players, and you get to rip packs, but we got some new players for you to be able to get, and also, like, we've got a new mode or some, like, new, like, feature kind of thing. But actually, one thing that sports games have been doing more recently is FIFA and Madden both have story modes now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so FIFA last year introduced The Journey, and The Journey is, like, a story of this kid named Alex Hunter who, like, goes from, you know, like, a trialist kid who makes it into a soccer team of your choice and, like, eventually becomes a star and wins the FA Cup. And now, like, the sequel, Journey 2, is coming out. And so it's like, oh, now he's an international superstar and all of the, like, big clubs are coming after him. And
Journey
how
harder.
Is stardom changing him? It's a very sports movie kind of thing. But...
Right.
It for those who are like, oh good, yay, I'm gonna pick up the next version of the same game, like, they can at least go, oh, look, cool, new story, great. And I think for a lot of people, just having a new story maybe is enough, right? Like, because there are so many people who play, like, Call of Duty, like, they buy Call of Duty, they play through the story over the course of 8 hours, they pay maybe, like, one round of multiplayer, then they're done, that's it, they got all the enjoyment they wanted out of it.
And see, like, that's why, like Call of Duty and Battlefield are games that come out every year. And if you look at them just like, oh, they all play the same. Because, yeah, I mean, they're first-person shooters. But, like, if you really, like, look at them and how the player bases move and how multiplayer is, they are different games for the people that play it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why there are players that haven't left, like, Black Ops 3 or haven't stopped playing Modern Warfare or whatever.
Yeah, I think Black Ops 3 actually at one point either surpassed the sales or surpassed the concurrence of Infinite Warfare.
Right.
Yikes.
So like when people are like, ah, Splatoon is the same thing, I can definitely see where it's coming from, but I also see how Nintendo at least added enough that I'd be like, ah, I mean, that's a sequel.
I mean, are they justified in charging $60 for a game with, like, yeah, I get on the back end, they're doing a lot of work to fix, like, problems from the previous game and, like, develop new maps and everything. But is that, in this day and age, like, a $60 proposition?
I mean, the only thing that I'd say that Splatoon 2 missed that some of the other, like, games that tend to get hit with the same issue is... is it's the same visual style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least the Battlefields and the Call of Duties and the Assassin's Creed, like, switch to a completely different era or visual style with new weapons and all that stuff. Whereas Splatoon 2 is still very much in that same, like, visual wheelhouse that the first game was. Like, if maybe they switched it to, like, 70s or 80s, like...
yes.
Visual, like clothing styles and stuff like that, that might have probably given them a little bit more room to be, like... Would have deflected some of that criticism of, hey, this is just Splatoon 1.5.
Yeah, Splatoon 1.1.
It's definitely a difficult topic, and you know, that's why I kind of judge sequels by how they make me feel more than, like, you know, what they physically are. Like, for example, I loved Valkyria Chronicles, and it just meant so much to me. It just kind of touched me. And then I don't expect Valkyria Revolution to be the same game. Like, I understand, okay, it has a smaller team, the visuals aren't going to be as nice, et cetera, et cetera. But you go to that, and it's just like, it doesn't give me any sort of the kind of feeling that I got with Valkyria Chronicles, because it's just so bad. So if even like the difference between Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger, I don't like Chrono Cross as a sequel to Chrono Trigger story-wise, but it still gave me that kind of sense of like mysticism that I got from Chrono Trigger. So to me, that makes it a valid sequel. That's what I look for, basically, because it's really hard to judge a sequel by its looks and its mechanics alone.
I think Destiny 2's problem right now is that it's kind of the worst of both worlds. Katie just wrote an article about, like, kind of profiling some of the people who are not jumping from Destiny to Destiny 2, because they're just like, okay, I was not impressed by the beta, and they're really ticked off by the fact that they can't carry over their loot, which if I put, like, 200-300 hours into Destiny, which is, let's be fair, a very repetitive and very grindy kind of game, and they're like, well, we're wiping the slate clean, good luck, do it all again in Destiny 2. Like, I can understand that's, like, pretty frustrating, but at the same time, they're not changing it that much, ultimately, from what Destiny was, so they're making the hardcore fans mad, because they're like, this is basically, like, maybe a more streamlined version of Destiny where I have to start completely over. Nice. And meanwhile, they're not actually changing that much. They're not changing dramatically enough to make you go, yeah, no, this is a new experience that I want to play. As Katie was kind of saying, it's mostly kind of like Splatoon 2, to be honest. Like, oh, did you, like, peace out of Destiny the first time? Or did you, like, miss Splatoon the first time? Well, here's a mulligan. And yeah,
that was the exact term I was going to say. I was like, Destiny 2 feels like when we were there at the Destiny announcement event, it's like, oh, this feels sort of like a mulligan. Like, these are all features that Destiny 1 really should have had, and you guys never added them, and now they're coming to Destiny 2. And it's like, I mean, that's great and all, but, like, don't try to sell, like, guilds or something to me as this wild new thing.
I've been doing that since the frickin' first, where it's like, awesome, we're introducing this stuff that has been WoW and WoW for more than a decade now. It's a new feature. I'm like, can you guys, like, maybe learn the lessons of the previous games just a little bit? Like, these games have existed for a long time now.
God, I was part of a guild when I was played Ragnarok Online in 2003. It was Team Discovery Channel.
But yeah, and then there's people that are upset about the changes they are making. Like, I guess, like, the Hunter class is, like, all sorts of not great or something. Mm-hmm. And, like, there, I don't know, it's a lot of what I'm hearing around the Destiny, from, like, the hardcore Destiny fans, is that Destiny 2, either one, isn't offering enough, or two, just is, like, it's kind of feels like a slap in the face. It's like, you spent all this time in Destiny 1, well, let's do it all over again, this new shiny game.
Yeah, it's like, I can give... Oh, sorry, Mike. I was going to say I can give Splatoon 2 a pass, because It's a great game, great concept. It was on the Wii U that no one had. So, okay, let's do it over again.
It sold really well, though.
It did, but it was still the Wii U. And, you know, Splatoon 2, even though you had, like, stuff that you fought for, that you gathered, it wasn't, like, grinding for 200 hours, then losing everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why.
And it was all cosmetic, and, like, the, I don't know, it doesn't feel as, like, starting over doesn't feel as, it doesn't hurt, you know?
Not as much, yeah.
It's like, and like you were saying there, Katie, like the two different sides of the fandom. It's like people, Assassin's Creed, one of my favorites, people like, well, I don't like the movement system. I wish they would redo it. The problem is they can't redo the movement system whole cloth because veteran Assassin's Creed players like myself like that movement. Like that's like what we're used to. And if they go too far, they lose us with the potential of not gaining anybody new for the changes, which is it's a huge problem pretty much for any developer, big or small, but especially for some of these like major publishers and their internal teams. Like they have games that sell in the millions and they cannot stray too far off the reservation.
Yeah.
Until it absolutely fails. And some developers get lucky. Like Square Enix has somehow worked out, especially with Final Fantasy, this ability to completely throw away everything from game to game. And I think they're one of the few major publishers that are able to do that.
I think though people wouldn't complain too hard if like they kept trotting out, say, the job system. And tacking it on to like a Final Fantasy VII story and going with traditional turn-based games. Like, I think it's not quote-unquote mainstream, but there's like such a huge nostalgia set that if they announced tomorrow that Final Fantasy 16 is basically going to be Final Fantasy VII, but with really nice graphics and a new story, everybody would be like, at last, Square Enix finally figured it out. They figured out what Square Enix, they stopped messing with the formula. They went back to what works. I cannot wait. And this is the most anticipated game of the year.
Yeah, I can totally see that happening. Because I think if, I didn't mind the battle system in 15, but I think if it like went into the trash tomorrow, I don't think anyone would weep for it.
Well, I would.
I don't think anyone would. At least not myself.
No. your turn code, no, Nadia. You've turned.
No, I like it. It's just like, you know, I don't like, my heart isn't committed to it. It works.
Am I the only one left? Am I like the last one like shoring up the blockades and saying that Final Fantasy 15 was actually like worth playing?
It I guess worth I am. Playing. At I'm least not on this it's team. Not worth playing. Are we having a breakup here? I'm
I guess you are.
I'm gonna bring up 13 again. 13 has a really good battle system. Just FYI, in my opinion.
Headline: Nadia and Kat now feuding. Blood God and Gout.
I think maybe part of the problem is that I'm really into Final Fantasy XII's battle system since playing the HD remake. So
your eyes have been opened. Your eyes have been opened to the beauty that is Final Fantasy XII.
It's a good game.
So here's a question that I'm wondering. It's like, what to you is an ideal sequel? A game, like a sequel that like you go, yes, this is the worthwhile sequel. And I would posit that a game that can take what the original did and elevate it somehow and build upon it and find some new way to make it go, okay, like here's a foundation. How can we go to the next level with this? And there have been plenty of really phenomenal sequels over the years. I think Super Mario Bros. 3 is a classic example of a game that like took the original formula of Super Mario Bros. And then just blew it out, right? Mm. Like expanded it like crazy. Like now you've got these gigantic worlds that you're exploring with like tons of little things to find and secret exits. And like Bowser has kids now and they're airships and the graphics are amazing, right? Like that's kind of what I think people want out of the sequel. Like the core of the game remains the same, but more and bigger and smarter. And like they're adding in like lots of little things that change the game somehow. I would say that maybe the game that has the best chance of doing that this year is Shadow of War, a game that not a lot of people, weirdly enough, are paying that much attention to, but dramatically changes up the formula of Shadow of Mordor, right? Like, mm-hmm. by adding in, like, these attacks on the towers and everything, and making it so that your allies are kind of, like, friendly nemeses, right? Like, really building on the concept of the nemesis system. Like, I'm actually pretty excited about Shadow of War and, like, what Shadow of War can do. But I am curious, like, what... First of all, okay, question. What is your ideal, like, a version of a sequel, and can you think of a game that you think just, like, really nailed it as being a sequel, Katie?
Yeah, the first thing I came to mind is Uncharted 2, honestly, because I feel like...
I was just thinking of that, yeah.
The first Uncharted is not great, I'll be honest. Like, it's not... It's a nice little adventure game, I guess, but, like, it doesn't... It's, like, you're in that same locale, like, most of the game, and it's just, like, not... Like, going back to it, especially, like, having replayed it when the HD collection came out, I was just like, wow, this game does not hold up, really. And Uncharted 2 is just, like, right off the bat, it's, like, there's this huge set piece, and that game moves at, like, a really, like, awesome pace. It's, like, basically paced like an action movie. And it, like, improves the combat, and the characters are more likable, I think. And it just, like, improves on Uncharted in, like, every way possible. And it's still the best Uncharted game, in my opinion. Like, it holds up really well. That's, like, I feel like that's, like, almost, like, the pinnacle of, like, what a sequel can do. Because it's, like, it takes you to so many locales. It really builds on the Uncharted formula. It, like, expands its characters, but not, like, too much. It's the ideal sequel. And I feel like that's... It's not like what I don't expect every sequel to be like Uncharted 2, obviously, but I feel like that's kind of what a sequel should be. It's something that improves on its predecessor while bringing something new to the table, not necessarily changing what made the original special or whatever.
I was going
to
say Pokemon Gold and Silver is a great example of a sequel that, like, it added day-night cycle, it added breeding, it made it so you could bring your old monsters in. It, like, introduced a whole new region that was fun to explore, made the graphics a lot better. And then the coup de grace, of course, was that you could go back to the old region and, like, it actually advanced the story. And, like, supposedly Gold and Silver was supposed to be, like, that. This was it. Like, Game Freak was like, well, that's the end of Pokemon. Yep. we've, like, done all we can possibly do with this series. And Nintendo was like, interesting. So how much money did we make out of Pokemon? Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
I'm gonna go Dead Space 1 to Dead Space 2. Dead Space 1 to Dead Space 2 was just the exact amount of, like, okay, we're gonna keep the tension of the corridors, but we're gonna give you a few different environments. Isaac is gonna talk now, we have a little bit more of the story. It was a really, really good sequel. And it's one of those things where I think another issue is, like, if you do that bigger and better thing, at some point you get to the issue where bigger, the Resident Evil problem, bigger becomes so big that you've lost what that original core that worked.
But RE2 was a great example of a great sequel, right?
Right, because RE2 was the first, like, step one of bigger. Then you go step two, then somehow you end up at RE6, which is so big and so out there. That's like, you're like, oh wow, we've lost
the plot
here.
Yeah. But that was because it was trying to build up on RE4, right?
Yeah,
right.
Which was a great game.
Which is why the better way is probably, like, almost say the Persona games, which I guess get bigger, but really it's more in that, let's just change up the environment.
Yeah.
Like, here's the game. Most of this really does work. We may add a new system, but what we're really changing is all of the characters, all of the environments, and the graphics get a bit better.
Persona 5, though, is way different from Persona 4.
I'd say Persona 5 was, like, the big leap, but also, like, I don't know where that formula can go from here. Like, I don't know what I'd want out of Persona 6. I feel like Persona 5 kind of, like, perfects that specific formula, whereas the leap from 3 to 4 is really not much at all.
It's no, like, no, 3 to 4 is pretty much like, oh, this is about a different cast.
Mm. Yeah.
better graphics.
But
oh, well hold on a moment. Like, structurally, Persona 4 is completely different from Persona 3, okay? Like, they do change it a lot. So in that regard, it is different. It has a totally different vibe than Persona 3, like, different story. And so it's not exactly like they just went, well, we're doing Persona 3 again.
And yeah, that's true.
This is what I'm talking about. The farther you are in with a game series, the more you will notice all it's of true. The structural mm-hmm. and mechanical changes.
Yes, like for me, for example, I'd be like, man, Madden 12, that was really bad game. That's Madden 25, total disaster. Madden 17, yeah, pretty good. And people are going, it's all Madden. All of the it's football men are throwing the footballs. But like, yes, but the corner routes are really broken in this one.
Yeah, like to me, Pokemon looks the same from thing to thing.
And you are wrong. And you are mad.
You are wrong. Hello. Gen 5 but, forever.
But to build off what Mike was saying, that seems to be a Capcom specialty where they do they have a good idea and then they just blow it out of the water with the second game and then they ride it to death. The Mega Man series is a great example. Mega Man 1 is okay. Mega Man 2 is just, as a sequel goes, is fantastic. You have more bosses, better music, this and that, better mechanics. Another great example I think less people know of is Mega Man Legends 2, which takes the original Mega Man Legends, which is like a really cute original game with like a really interesting story and really adorable characters, and Mega Man 2, Legends 2 just makes it look better, believe it or not. The soundtrack's great. The dungeons are a lot better realized. The enemies are a lot more interesting, and the story is also a lot more interesting. And of course, we all know what happened to Mega Man Legends 3, so it's not like I can really tell you how that series went downhill, can I?
All right. I'm sure that I think it's appropriate that we ended up talking about sequels and what is really a sequel to From Us to You, the podcast. but I'm sure you have thoughts, so I'm curious. Send us on social media or usgamer at usgamernet. Share your thoughts. What is to you like the perfect example of a great sequel? I mean, Mega Man 2 comes to mind, for example. I'm sure you can think of plenty of others. And conversely, maybe send some ideas of like disappointing sequels, like games that did not build on the promise of the original game. Cough, Crackdown 2, cough. In any case, US Gamer, the US Gamer podcast is, of course, a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes right now. We're going to be adding our podcast to Stitcher, Google Play, and all of the others. Maybe we'll try and get it on Spotify. And of course, you can also find us on SoundCloud. US Gamer Net is the name. And also follow us on Twitter. We are US Gamer Net. Facebook is US Gamer Net. Do a favor and like us. We stream every Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. That's Mike and Friends, the U.S. Gamer Lunch Hour. Make sure to subscribe to us at twitch.tv/USGamerNet. Mike, we can follow you at Automatic Zen. Katie at YumeCatie. That's YumeCaty. Kate Nadia at Nadia Oxford. And of course, Kat, that's me, at @_CatBot. We will be back once again, every Wednesday from here on out, we're going to be recording a new podcast, the US Gamer Podcast. So make sure to subscribe, tell your friends we're going to be here, and let us know if you would like to see us streaming. We may make this a regular live thing. But thanks to all of the fam at US Gamer for making this podcast a success. I had a lot of fun talking these last 80 minutes, and I'm sure the podcasts are going to get even longer, especially once we hit the holiday season. But in the meantime, yeah, we will be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And until next time, see ya.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.